And now, your ChillPack Hollywood Hour with Dean Haglund and Phil Lernis.
Friends, this is your Chill Pack Hollywood Hour coming to you a couple days, again, later than we like. We apologize. We have not been maintaining our rigorous Monday morning schedule of late. But
to be fair, you just got married.
I did get married. There's a lot going on. And and how much do these people pay for the podcast?
But they like the punctuality of 11 years.
That's true. And if you could see Dean Haglund, you would know that he is enjoying some leftover wedding risotto.
Nothing like wedding risotto. It rolls off the tongue.
Now, we have so much to talk about, to make sense of. We have literally not done any kind of a post-game analysis.
Of course.
Any kind of, what do they call it? What does a medical examiner do?
Debrief?
Debrief, but I was thinking more, really get under the skin of it.
Oh, an autopsy.
An autopsy. We haven't done an autopsy
an autopsy of our three-day bender of a weekend.
Oh, my goodness. It started just before 7 on Friday for all of us, and it ended midnight really on Sunday. So
yeah,
it was a hard nonstop go.
marathon of drinking.
But I will tell you this before we move on to something else, because it makes for a nice segue, and we'll wind our way back to the wedding stuff in a bit. But in the receiving line at the wedding, it was so kind of astonishing how many people came up and were gushing, saying, "That was the best wedding ever," right?
Right.
And the reason it was astonishing was I never think in terms of that about weddings.
About how
like
good
I'm
or bad
coming.
They're...
Well, I'm coming to your wedding,
right?
Right. It's your wedding. It's hopefully the only one of your weddings, depending on who the person is,
right,
that I will attend. We all know when we've gone to a wedding that's a dumpster fire. We know.
Yes. Oh,
we
my
know
God.
That. But I guess for a lot of people, like there is. Like, they're ranking them.
Right, because some of them aren't completely unenjoyable. They are hours and hours of, well, why is this even happening?
And we, of course, through all the years of going to weddings together, of course, Lily and I got ideas of things that we would like to do, things that, how do we do this in a way that is us? So, obviously, we're talking about what goes on at the wedding, but just, it's so funny, best wedding ever. And then when the reception starts, like at the risotto, people taste the risotto and go, "Oh my God, this is the best wedding food ever." And, you know, it's really, this is a show business town, and I just want to say to these people, simply to be nominated is an honor.
Right, yes.
Yeah.
I nominate this the best wedding. I haven't gone to all of them yet. Once I've seen them, then I will let you know.
I will say this, if there is an award for best... First man, best man speech. That's the category Dean would be eligible for.
Would be eligible for. Yes,
we'll come back to that in a minute because I really need your help with some award stuff.
Yes,
we do not do our Oscar Smackdown anymore. What? Because quite frankly, we can never get around to fulfilling the bets.
The bets, I know. You still owe me.
A half marathon. Does it. You're not inspiring me by telling me that you walk down by like USC where you used to go with the dogs all the time and like your lungs are bleeding.
I know. So that ain't happening.
It was easier getting like regular exercise with the dogs, not only because of the schedule, but also when you're walking animals, you're not really aware quite so much of the exercise.
How far are you walking? Right. You have to get to a space that they like, they can go. And
it's fun. And if they're happy and you're kind of basing it on how they're doing.
Exactly. You're focused on something else.
What are your Oscars are this Sunday night?
Oh, yeah.
No hosts. Quite frankly, after, again, how great everything went this weekend, that they did not call upon all of us to produce this show. It's ridiculous. But it is. It is the busiest season of the year in Hollywood, what with the Oscars this weekend and our wedding last weekend.
I thought they shut down traffic on Hollywood for your wedding. Frankly, I thought that's why.
Well, actually, when we pulled in over at the Vista in that bus and stuff, weren't you kind of like going, how is this going to play with all the traffic?
I know.
And
I
it mean, was really very quiet Sunday morning.
I know, surprisingly. Because that was a 1974 transit bus from Tacoma that went down the side streets by Prospect Studios.
A street that I did not... Lily and I were convinced Talmadge didn't go through on that route. So what are your plans for the Oscars this Sunday?
I am going to buy some Epsom salts, fill up the bathtub, open a bottle of champagne, and turn the TV off.
Turn the TV off. Oh my God. I'm going to shave my hiney with a cheese grater and squat in a bowl of gin.
Oh, because that would be more pleasurable. I'm going to read about it on Twitter as it comes in on my phone. And just see the aftermath.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. What? You're going to pretend you're in Australia and that you have to get it 19 hours later.
That's right.
I mean, are you not intrigued at all by how a hostless show... I mean, the last time they went hostless, Rob Lowe bumped and grinded with Snow White.
Because Alan Carr, my friend went down to Alan Carr's Palm Desert place where he was grinding grapefruits in a juicer and a bottle of vodka, and he was liquored up, and then the assistant... was making the calls. So he saw the sex tape of Rob Lowe, and he says, Rob Lowe sings at the Oscars with...
With Snow White.
Yeah, that was one of his slightly sober ideas.
Okay.
That's Alan Carr, ladies and gentlemen.
So, but we have no idea what's happening. I mean, this year, again, talk about dumpster fire. Right up until a week ago, they were saying, well, here's how we're going to make sure we keep it to 3 hours. Four awards are going to be presented during commercial breaks.
Right.
And two of those awards, cinematography and editing.
Kind of big deals.
Yeah, they are kind of big deals. Whether or not they're household names. If there's a movie that you like, I'm going to argue that the cinematography and the editing were big reasons why.
Exactly.
No good movie has ever been poorly shot or poorly edited.
That's right.
They may have been poorly directed. They may not have actually gotten a great performance from a lead.
Right.
But through how they were shot and edited...
There's no way you could slough that off. Yeah.
Magic. That's yes. right. Look, I'm never gonna for a moment say that anyone is more important than the director or the lead actor.
Right. However, there's a way to save it and there's a way not to
right.
save it.
And way to undo it.
Yep.
But sometimes if you go, well, how was this a bad performance by this actor that's so great? The answer is either, possibly both, but either they were miscast.
Right.
Or it was poorly edited. It was poorly ruined in the editing.
Yeah, they picked the wrong takes and all that sort of thing for storytelling.
Because sometimes, Gene Hackman, there was a Western that he did, I think, with Sharon Stone, and his performance is so bad in it, and it's because of the editing technique of the movie. He did not come across it. He needed longer takes. But the way that Sam Raimi shot it and the way that it was edited in these pieces, it denies him the chance to really explore the character in those longer takes.
Right.
So, anyway, so you're going to be ignoring the Oscars altogether. I'm going to be at the American Cinematheque at the world-famous Egyptian Theater.
Egyptian Theater.
Just a half block from where the Oscars are themselves being held.
Right.
And watching them on the huge screen.
Oh.
The big wide screen.
Fun.
In vintage attire and getting liquored up. And,
there's liquor involved?
I don't know. Maybe.
Because if I can... put my rasped hiney in gin at the Egyptian, I might think of showing up.
But
BYOL.
Bring your own Lily, and I will be doing that. My very own, my wife. My wife. Have you met my wife?
Yes. Congratulations. Yeah, okay. You get to say that now.
So the first time I actually got to use the phrase "my wife," by the way, was in anger. shouting at a server for the second time my wife had been denied the right to eat at her own wedding. And I was righteously indignant. And wow. I found that, boy, the phrase "my wife with righteous indignation" mm-hmm. sounds so good. You know, so I've been practicing different phrases, right? Grant my wife parole right now.
So now you're just going to sit on your lawn with a shotgun yelling about, "My wife hates you when you put the recycling in the bin."
My God, you started like some sort of country guy and you ended Bill Cosby.
Yeah, see? That's my range.
With the...
Recycling,
but and it was socially conscious. That's right.
See,
that's right.
Way to analyze an improv moment to death.
All right, help me with some of these predictions because, as you know, I do the Midweek Drive and the Midweek Drive Morning Edition frequently. The Midweek Drive Morning Edition, which is midnight here in Los Angeles on Wednesdays,
right?
And with their film critic, the esteemed Richard Fitzwilliams.
Mm.
We have an Oscar smackdown,
right.
You and I, where we predict the winners.
Right.
And I've been doing very well against him, though in fairness, he would clean the floor with me if they were BAFTA predictions.
Right. Because the BAFTAs generally vote differently than the Academy.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
I think, you know, you collect enough cereal box tops, you get a BAFTA. I have no way of knowing.
No,
they're not.
No, it's a smaller community.
They're not,
they know each other from RADA.
So help me. I've got just a couple of questions on this.
Let's start with you.
How about Best Picture?
Oh, so
is it a foregone conclusion to you that Roma's going to win?
Well, it seems that way, and yet, you know, there's some jitters. It could be splitting the vote between that and Black Panther, right?
Well, so splitting the vote. So here's the. Pictures nominated.
Yeah, 10 of them.
Black Klansman. Mm-hmm. I think there's 8.
Mm.
Yeah, there's 8. Black Klansman.
Right.
Black Panther.
Right.
I think the confusion by the entirely white Academy is going to split that vote.
Right. Dear Lord.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. No, I'm looking at the Golden Razzies for worst film.
No, you are not. Is that true?
Jesus. Bohemian Rhapsody. Again, if that were to win... That would, I think...
And the Academy as we know it?
I think, at least in the modern history, we can't go back, you know, like 50s right. exactly, because it's film criticism is so different now.
Right.
But in modern history, meaning 1970s on, that would be far and away the most critically reviled film to win. I mean,
to win an Oscar.
Like, it's not even on the top 100
yeah.
of films of the year. So anyway...
But nobody's going out to try really promote that. You're not seeing a lot of...
Yeah, but Ron... Well, we're going to get to Best Actor in a minute.
Yeah,
so anyway...
Yeah, that's different.
So then there's The Favorite. And that's so confusing whenever I'm on the radio with Richard Fitzwilliams because he'll keep referring to it, and I think he means The Front Runner. So in all these categories, he'll say The Favorite is not going to win. And he thinks there's an upset in every category? And then the other way I'm confused is that there's this "you" in the word favorite.
Oh, yeah, see. That, I've been in Australia. I'm very comfortable with "yous" and stuff.
I got married in a theater that was spelled... R-E, which was very...
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Theater.
Green Book.
Yeah.
Roma, A Star is Born, and Vice. So, you brought up a couple of the black movies.
Yeah.
Again, Roma is the front runner.
It is the front runner, for sure.
But here's the thing, is when she first saw Green Book, Lily Holloman said... here's your Best Picture winner.
Right there.
And it felt to me, certainly at the time, like, yeah, this has all the things...
Of Driving Miss Daisy.
Yeah, that Academy, or In the Heat of the Night, you know, it's got...
Important issues.
It told in a very entertaining way.
Yeah, personal way.
And it's got its liberal heart in the right place. Mm-hmm. And it's got significant heavyweight multifaceted acting
right.
by very acclaimed, esteemed actors.
Right.
So I thought, yeah, this feels right. And
right.
for the longest time, I was willing to pick an upset on this because of this issue of the Academy wanting to spread it around, like we know they do want to do.
Right.
And isn't Roma going to win Best Foreign Language Film?
Right? Because, and, well, then, yeah, can it win both?
Well,
that's what everyone.
And isn't Alfonso Cuarón going to win Best Director?
For sure. He has to.
And yet,
he's been overlooked so many times.
And yet, here's the thing. Well, no, he hasn't been. He won for Gravity.
Yeah.
But here's the thing is it's such, he does everything in that movie, right? He photographs it, he produces it, wrote it. It's so personal. It's this breathtakingly incomparable piece of visual art. Okay.
Right. It's crossing history and all that.
Whereas Green Book has that feel of the classic Hollywood collaboration to it, right?
Right.
But here's also my confusion with Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay.
If he wins Best Foreign Language Film for it,
right,
you know who gets the award for Best Foreign Language Film?
Who?
The director. But you know who gets the award for Best Picture?
The producer.
Is the producer. Okay, so here's this fascinating possibility, right?
Okay.
Where everybody in the foreign language, you know, when voting for that, thinks, well, Roma's going to win Best Picture. Let's give Best Foreign Language Film to somebody else.
Right.
And then you could have a situation where Alfonso Cuarón doesn't win. Because Roma wins Best Picture, but the producer gets it. Although I think he's the producer.
He must have produced it.
But so he's in the mix, therefore, for more awards than just this, because you've got screenplay and cinematography. But he would win it, I think, for Best Picture. He would win it for Best Foreign Language Film, and then Best Director. Do we really see him getting... Do we really see everybody... I understand also in the wake of all the controversy in this country and the dialogue over the Michigas, over a wall...
Yes.
And immigration, the Academy, again, liberally, their heart might be, let's send a message and embrace the Mexico City filmmaker.
Right.
But are they going to give him all those awards?
Right. That's a lot to give. Do you spread that out? And so by spreading it out, if you go Roma, Best Foreign, and him, Best Director, then you free up your best movie to then, if you are... I don't know, an Academy member worried about TV ratings, you're going to pick, if you look at the scale of box office, there are 7 films that all hung around, 100 million. And then there's Black Panther that did nearly $1 billion.
But they will not give it that, I'm going to argue, because the Academy wants to be the one that helps the film, a la Moonlight, to get box office.
Right.
Green Book's the one that could be helped at the box office by
it.
And I understand also the appeal of a Black Klansman, a Black Panther is, now if we give foreign and director to Cuarón, we've talked about immigration. If we give Black Panther or Black Klansman, we've talked about race, which is the other big issue we want to come down on the right side of in terms of the conversation. But doesn't Green Book give them the opportunity to do that?
Yes.
We know Mahershala Ali will win Best Supporting Actor.
Right.
And again, so it all comes back to me to Green Book being the one that could win, because I think Black Klansman with Spike Lee, he's going to finally get an Oscar, but it's going to be for screenplay. It's going to be for adapted screenplay. But this is now a political campaign, and the swift boating... of Green Book has been on full time since December, where all these articles with Dr. Shirley's family coming out of the woodwork saying, this is not him, this is not, and then the tapes that they finally reveal are, oh yeah, this is exactly what he said.
Yeah, right.
But and then they're whitewashing the problems of race in the South and the real prejudice and everything. And there's a case to be made for that. What I like about the film is that it's set then, but speaks more to the kind of racism of now, which is almost the blind spot institutional racism.
Right, systemic.
Where people who would not think themselves racist at all then behave in a racist way because it's learned behavior.
Right.
Not because of any hatred in their heart. So we're
turmoiled in all of this history, but then this is the one thing that Black Panther has, is a movie that's not about pain. It's about black people, superheroes, and a place, Wakanda. It's a celebration. And if it's Oscar nominated, good Lord, can we have a moment? If indeed the Academy is trying to get eyeballs to the screen, would they not champion a movie that had eyeballs on the screen.
You know? I guess. I just think that the nomination was the win. They get the eyeballs because they get the people turning in. It's not like people are going to go, oh my God, Black Panther just won. Let's turn it over to the Oscars. Right. It's over at that point.
And,
and it's the first time, is it not, that a superhero comic book movie has been nominated for Best Picture? Because remember, Dark Knight wasn't.
That's
what leads to the rules changes of expanding the number of Best Picture nominees, because the numbers that apparently supported that Dark Knight was 6 in a field of 5.
So if
they expanded it, it would have been nominated, and they would have had more people tune in.
Right.
Who weren't just tuning in to see a
obscure.
No. But what's
Heath
after
Ledger?
Death? After death.
Posthumous.
Posthumous.
Yeah.
To hear, you know, these people weren't tuning in just to see a posthumous receiving of Best Supporting Actor on behalf of Heath Ledger.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the first one, and are they really going to give? Would they really give this one?
Yeah, that's true.
Best Picture.
Okay, well now you're right. Then Green Mile, but now that
Green,
seems,
not Green Mile, Green, Green Book,
Green Book, Green Book seems like such.
But so now let me maybe bring the this is what I guess I have to ask.
Right.
If Roma wins Best Picture and I don't pick it, do I feel an idiot?
Well, no, because you're dividing the strategy. You are sitting in amongst the Academy members. You are feeling the zeitgeist of your community, and so you are.
I'm doing a lot of stuff.
You're a busy fella, and so you are strategizing, I would think, as one would a group of an Academy members, perhaps having this same discussion around the bar or the cafe table when they're deciding who to vote for. There's, 5,200 members of the Academy? It's a small, august group. And I would think that this conversation goes on as they decide who and what picture to pick.
All right. So let's go through these others and we'll dial back to it. So achievement in directing, Spike Lee for Klansman, Paul Polakowski for Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
Very cool. Yorgos Lanthimos for The Favorite, Alfonso Cuarón, Roma, Adam McKay, Vice. Of course, the only person I can pick is Alfonso Cuarón.
Right.
Best lead actor, Christian Bale for Vice, Bradley Cooper, A Star is Born, Willem Dafoe at Eternity's Gate, Rami Malek for Bohemian Rhapsody. Who did I love more from Mr. Robot than Rami Malek?
And
who can I stand less in Bohemian Rhapsody? And again, we're going to give acting awards to shitty movies. I don't.
Hey, My Cousin Vinny won Best Actor.
And then Viggo Mortensen for Green Book.
Yeah.
All right. Where's
your head at this one?
Well, it's been all over the place here again. Rami Malek, again, he wins the BAFTA. He's the front runner. He's been winning everything. Christian Bale at some point has to win one, doesn't
exactly.
he? And he's invisible inside that
I
thing.
Know.
In a way that Rami Malek never is.
Exactly.
But then Viggo is very deserving but won't get it. Willem Dafoe, nobody even knows that he's nominated,
right.
Let alone the people voting for it. But then my question, a lot of people, and they're the actors in the Academy, felt that Bradley Cooper got snubbed for Best Director.
Right.
Always my point is you got to look to see who got the nomination instead. In 1985, everybody was up in arms that Steven Spielberg got snubbed for Color Purple. Guys, can we just point out that Akira Kurosawa got that nomination instead?
Yeah, right.
Nobody snubbed when Akira Kurosawa. Yeah. So in this case, Paweł Polakowski, the Polish filmmaker for Cold War, that's a pretty cool deal. But would they give it to Bradley Cooper? Suddenly, is that going to get
sympathy? Yes, as an apology to say, we're sorry you didn't get Best Director. Here's your Best Actor.
So you see how you can twist your synapses into a bunch. coming up with this stuff.
Twisted a bunch.
So you think Christian Bale, huh?
I'm feeling Christian Bale over, but the Bradley Cooper argument now is pretty succinct. But like you said, Malick's winning him across the globe, including a Golden Globe, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but often that is the one that they say, okay, he's won it for that. He doesn't need ours, so to speak.
So that's the other one I still haven't made up my mind on. Best Picture, Best Actor. We've got a supporting actor, as I mentioned, Mahershala Ali for Green Book. Mm-hmm. He's had this award locked in. And isn't it interesting that we're living in... I don't even make up a word for it, but do you remember a couple years ago during first season of True Detective, the McConaissance? Because McConaughey is winning the Oscar for Best Actor, and he's starring in season one of True Detective.
Right.
And here's Mahershala Ali about to win maybe his second Oscar in a row for supporting actor after Moonlight, and he's starring in season three of True Detective and crushing it.
Is he? Oh, good. Yeah. I haven't seen
it. It's so good. And they just finally tied it in. And middle of the next to last episode, it tied into season one. And you realize it's the same case. Very cool. Spoiler alert.
Wow. Thank you.
So he's doing that. Best supporting actress. Oh, best actress. Glenn Close had been winning a lot of awards. But here's another case of the only thing it's nominated for, and we're so blown away by a performance in a terrible movie. I think it has to be Olivia Colman for The Favorite, because if The Favorite is only going to win
one thing,
it has to be her.
Acting award.
Yeah.
But, I mean, all three of them, it was such an ensemble piece. How do you give them to one?
Well, but two of them are in the supporting. Right. I think it has to be her. And remember, the Academy does like it when they get to award journeymen.
Yes.
Actors.
Yeah, yeah.
Who are finally given their real turn in the spotlight.
True. That's true.
So I'm feeling like it's that, and I feel like for Glenn Close, the nomination was the award.
Okay.
That's what I think. Okay. Supporting actress, I think it's Regina King for If Beale Street Could Talk. She's been winning everything.
Yes. So. And very good on that.
And and has shared the screen with Lily Holloman on several occasions.
What?
In the TV series Southland.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I'm going to see that sometime.
All right. Animated film.
Oh, this is a tough one. I haven't seen many of these.
Incredibles 2.
Yeah.
Isle of Dogs, which I think is spectacular.
Yeah.
Mirai, which I think is a movie that is nominated for animated feature. Ralph Breaks the Internet, ditto.
Yeah.
And then Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, and this feels to me like the one that wins on the cultural
grounds. I think so. I mean, it's got so many... Oops, sorry. It's got so many of interesting animated, almost experimental aspects to it. I'm giving it to Spider-Man myself.
Documentary feature. Interesting. A Free Solo about this Yosemite climb.
Oh, yeah.
And people love this thing.
It's apparently scary to see in a big screen.
Hale County This Morning, This Evening, which is a real experimental film. I'm amazed that the documentary branch nominated this. It's this tone poem experimental documentary. Minding the Gap of Fathers and Sons. All the momentum seems to be behind Free Solo, but I'm thinking it's RBG, which I wasn't a huge fan of.
Yeah.
But
here she is.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Doesn't the Academy have to?
Yeah, kind of, right? To just have her stay until the end of the Trump era?
Yep, exactly. Exactly.
Please stay alive till the end.
So we got that. Foreign language film?
Yeah.
Roma. I mean... Roma, though Cold War with Paweł Pawlikowski getting a Best Director nomination.
I know.
If people assumed that Roma was going to win Best Picture, that's my question. Couldn't there be an upset in that category?
Right, then Cold War win the Best Foreign.
Oh, Lord, it's hard being mean.
Being mean?
It's easy being mean.
Yeah, you're very good at being mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explains most of the vows at the wedding. Adapted screenplay. Here's where, like I said, I think it's Spike Lee for Black Klansman.
Yeah.
Though I love that the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
I know, but I didn't know that was even
an adaptation.
It seems so Coen written.
Can You Ever Forgive Me is a really wonderful screenplay as well. Mm-hmm. If Beale Street Could Talk and A Star Is Born, but I think it has to be Spike Lee this year. That's the safe category to give him an award. Sure. Original screenplay, interesting, the nominees are The Favorite, First Reformed, which is such a good screenplay, which got shut out in all other categories. I mean, Ethan Hawke deserved the Best Actor nomination. Green Book, Roma, and Vice. Now, here we get into a little bit of trouble again, because I thought Green Book was a shoo-in, absolutely, for original screenplay.
Right.
But all the controversy.
Of course. So that means everyone's shying away from it.
Would they? I mean, so I don't know. But doesn't Green Book, I mean, that felt like the safe one to give them. I mean, right. Unless they think, okay, Vice. Look, if it's going to be a Roma sweep, then you could give it to Roma, but that doesn't feel like, they're not going to give it to a foreign language screenplay. I just
that
don't.
That doesn't seem right. And a lot of that film was in, like, silence, like the, you know, beach scene.
Good
like
point.
All of two lines, so that's not really a screenplay. That's the director, you know, the family has a day on the beach is basically like the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Well, so, I don't know, so.
I'm going to say Green Book on that
one. Okay,
all right. I'm going to say they're going to embrace the controversy.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess they could give Yorgos Lanthimos for the favorite screenplay.
But they'll say they spelt it wrong, so right there.
Yeah,
it's a spelling
that's
problem.
That's true. It's a spelling problem
in the title.
Wrong language.
Yes. Spelling problem in the title.
If you can't get the easy part right, how can we get the...
I am sure. This is the lesson one, what they say in screenwriting class. Make sure it's spelled correctly.
You remember when Les Liaisons Dangereuses was made into a movie and they called it Dangerous Liaisons?
Yeah.
Because the producers said nobody will understand
the French.
But nobody in this country knew what a liaison was, anyway. All right.
But it sounded dangerous.
So I don't know if I really have any other...
I don't think I helped you at all.
You didn't. No, I mean, but I think I'm okay. Like, I really did my research on all these others. Feel good, but I just... It's actor, a little bit screenplay now I'm worried about, and then Best Picture, so...
Well, I'm feeling there's a lot of stress in Los Angeles. Coming back here feels much more a stressful city. So I think everybody's just going to not have time to vote. So it's going to be a Roma sweep now that I think about it. Because that's like the easy one. You saw it on Netflix. You didn't have to go out to a screen. You didn't have to just turn it on, watch it, and go, that's amazing. And just vote it across the board as many times as it showed up on your ballot.
I do think increasingly... The Academy is starting to think about the historic conversation.
Right, right.
And so, because remember Crash beating Brokeback Mountain?
Yeah.
That seemed to be a watershed of, guys, this is not going to look good in the future.
Yeah.
So, hence the surprise to a lot of people, which I got right, Moonlight over La La Land.
Yeah.
Because... Honestly, in the long arc of history, is the first musical that's going to win Best Picture in however, you know, a century, for crying out loud, going to be La La Land?
Of all things.
Or are you going to be really on kind of the cutting edge in terms of the... So, Roma feels like the one that is the safe bet if you're trying to predict the historic conversation.
I agree. I think, And because it seems much more stressful in this town these days,
yeah,
I think it's Roma.
You mentioned that.
Yeah.
So this is the second time you've mentioned stress. So
yeah,
Dean,
listen, there's five edges right there.
Dean, do you want to talk about your stress a little bit?
Well, listen, it's been a nonstop marathon since we left Australia. So, and it culminated with this three-day marathon.
But did the Lily Holloman, Phil Ernest wedding not serve to... be a salve to the stress in any way in this city?
It was highly enjoyable, absolutely. It was a salve. It was, but yet...
Best wedding ever, if what I hear is true.
Because those who fail to plan to fail. And the planning, as we saw...
People mocked me about that script.
Down to the second. At 11:21, Tucker had to speak, or the whole thing was off.
So we even what I loved was when we got to the Vista.
Yeah.
To find out that we're running 10 minutes behind, it's not because the wedding party arrived late. We were on time. They opened the house 10 minutes late,
right?
Which was fine. Like, we didn't want to, so we had time to kind of like hang out and have fun in the lobby and everything before getting started.
Yeah.
But to the second everything worked, like, you know, that Raiders of the Lost Ark intro music, I had that the cues for when each of you would
walk in.
I had those cues in my head probably 4.5 years ago. And it worked out to that precision.
Exactly.
So
we did have maybe the third man theme.
The walk.
Yeah, the walk.
The walk through by the bride. Took a little less time than it did in rehearsal. But what was great about it was then she got to do a little dance.
Yes, when
she
arrived. We all danced.
That was lovely. It was really lovely. Yeah, because she had wanted to dance through her procession. And I had apologized. Now, the rehearsal, people might be interested in knowing, was...
a disaster.
Oh, my God. It was a shitstorm in a dumpster fire. And...
I love the DVD jamming.
It was so awful. Disappearing. Just vanishing.
Yeah.
So I went up to Lily's brother, who walked her down the aisle, up the aisle, and then down the aisle, because it was a circle. Right. I said, Vernon, I'm sorry that you didn't get a chance to rehearse your dance. And he said, we rehearsed it enough, which is to say not at all. And I realized, oh, the dance isn't happening. So it was great that Lily got to do a little dance. We're just starting right in the middle. But so she enters, she does her procession. The bridesmaids do this procession. They appear, so we get married in this movie theater, right? This ornate
1924. Movie
theater. 1924, oldest continually operating theater in Los Angeles.
Right.
And she appears in what looks like an entrance to a temple that's up, an Egyptian temple, up at the front next to the screen.
By the fire exits.
The bridesmaids come out first, one by one. To the dance of the Dream Man music, the little midget dancing backwards in front of a wall, a red curtain Twin Peaks.
Yep.
And they come out and they go up one aisle, out into the lobby,
right,
and then come back down the other aisle to line up alongside the stage.
Right.
And what was so amazing, and we even talked about this up on stage, because you were next to me and Lee was next to me, like we said, oh my God, there's tension in the house.
Because it's mysterious music.
Yeah, and nobody knew what they were doing. Like, why are they walking up there?
Why is it so slow?
What is happening?
What's going to happen next?
What is going to happen? Yeah. There was actual tension, palpable tension in the house. And we're laughing because I don't know if we've ever... we've been to weddings, and I don't know if there's ever been a wedding we've been to where the people up at the altar are more relaxed and calm than the audience.
Yeah, I know, right? Because you don't know what you have choreographed, what you've staged. For all, I thought if we were doing the Raiders of the Lost Ark, the groomsmen would have been fun to spend an hour up with the figureheads, the female figureheads, and then at their cues, swing out on ropes across the stage. But you pre-plant them before the actual audience comes in.
To rappel down,
just on the cue.
So Lily comes in to the third man theme.
Right.
And I realized when we were doing a tech rehearsal earlier in the week that you were not a part of, and I was listening to this and watching her go, I was realizing, oh, this is actually really interesting because she's circling me. First, she's walking away from me.
Right.
Instead of just foregone conclusion, she's walking down to be given to me.
Right.
Like, she gets to make the choice lobby.
In the lobby, she could still bolt.
Yeah, I could get... That bus is waiting for me.
Some milk duds and a Kit Kat bar.
And so there's this moment of pause as she has to cross this threshold and really make this decision.
Right.
Before coming back down. And it's the third man theme. And I was thinking about, well, there was the man I was before I knew her.
Right.
There's the man that I've been during the 11 years we've been together.
Yep.
And now... I will be yet a
third man. Oh,
so very interesting. I am the third man.
You are the third
man.
Who
knew?
Who knew?
All right. Let's back this up a little bit,
though. Are we going to go to the bachelor party?
So this was, as anybody who listens to this podcast knows, this was there was a troubled history to the bachelor party. It started out fantastic. Everything fell into place perfectly.
Perfectly.
Lost Spirits Distillery.
We were going to do the boat tour, drinking whiskey in every different room that had a different movie theme.
And then we were going to soak up 3 hours of whiskey, rye, and rum flights with pasta, with bowls of pasta.
Just nearby.
What could be more perfect?
Yeah, it would have been walking distance.
And then Lost Spirits Distillery burns. It burns.
I keep saying the bachelor party burnt down, so we had to do something else. Not quite accurate. There was a fire.
A lot of different places were considered Steve Lem...
Bless him.
Team player, give till it Hertz, Steve Lem, took it upon himself to drink at every establishment in downtown Los Angeles and some in Hollywood.
Right.
Just so that he could comparison shop.
Bless him. I would have done that too, but I was still...
He found this place, and I had read about it before and been intrigued, but I don't go bar crawling anymore, right? But this speakeasy...
is cool.
In Chinatown.
Yeah.
And everybody loves the phrase speakeasy, and some of them are authentic old speakeasies,
right.
And some of them, but
not really.
But when you are entering through a freezer,
a meat freezer
in Chinatown, in a Chinatown alley, literally right next to the subway stop,
yep.
The above rail train stop,
the Gold Line.
Yeah, you're in a speakeasy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And so this is a place, it's an establishment. It's Birdsong Cafe, and you can find it.
Easily enough.
Because it's a coffee shop in the morning.
During
that's
the day.
What it is.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, you go through this freezer unit, and you go into this speakeasy
tiny
they
bar.
Have that only opens at 8 o'clock at night,
yep.
Every night. And they opened early for a setup, opened early just for the 9 of us.
Right. On the guarantee that we would do a $200 worth of
which was like nothing.
Yeah, I think
like other places have like 500 minimums. I mean,
yeah.
I mean $200 drink a couple hours drinking for nine guys.
Considering those fancy whiskeys with the smoke and everything, those are $14 whiskeys, right?
And so, you're gonna tip a little bit off of it.
Oh, absolutely. I think my bill alone, my credit card stat was $200.
Well, see, Dean Haglund was
I saved the day personally.
So they just needed to. Okay, we are confirming that Dean Haglund will come. Okay, then you can have the.
We are good.
The which is the whole reason that Uncle Harry came to the wedding. But anyway, more on him in a moment.
Oh my gosh!
So 9 guys get together on a Friday night. Nobody, everybody knows a few. Like you knew several
majority,
of the guys.
Yeah.
Bert knew, and you'd interacted via email. But for the most part, the bulk of these people, nobody knew more than 2 or 3.
Right.
Of the 9,
only you knew them all.
Yeah, and for a couple of them. John Giroudo, our friend who's been on this show, who has forgotten more about Hollywood history than most people will ever learn.
Yep.
And Tucker Smallwood, who's been on this show. They both are attending their first bachelor parties of their lives.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
That's amazing.
And then there's the man who was my brother-in-law-to-be, who was there, Ben Brown. And serving as my legal counsel. So important. I can't stress this enough.
Bring your legal counsel
your bachelor event. But it isn't bad to remind the other attendees that the attorney-client privilege does not extend to them. And,
which is unfortunate.
And when one of your groomsmen shows up, puts something very heavy in the inside of your coat pocket, and you are going, is that what I think it is? And he then whispers to you, I just gave you a gun. It's so good to have legal counsel.
It's a lovely gold.
It's golden gun. It's a golden gun.
Yeah.
Real enough in terms of heft and mold that you could get in a lot of trouble with it in the dark
with
cops.
Yeah, for sure.
But also, did I mention it's gold? So that alone could get you into some trouble.
That's not real gold, though. That's real gold?
22 karat gold.
What? But it's plated. It's a plated heavy thing.
4 in the world. There's 4 in the world.
Well, yeah. You got one of them.
And I have one of them. Oh. So anyway.
Put that away.
Yeah. Look, as you know, as a violence prevention specialist.
I know. I'm have a golden gun.
I'm opposed to violence, but I'm also very good at it.
Yeah. Right. the mystery of the evening, of course. Where did my eyeglass arm?
That's not the mystery of the evening. That's kind of the least romantic part of the evening.
Romantic,
what I was
it's a bachelor
get
party.
To was that the 9 guys all hit it off like gangbusters.
Yes, absolutely.
Immediately.
So funny.
Like that dinner, I mean, it was spectacular. First of all, the food was fantastic.
Great.
And we closed the place down.
Yes.
My all-time favorite musical artist, Paul Weller, it's a 1.5-hour mix of his music playing, and I'm asking the people who work there, why Paul Weller music? And they say, who's Paul Weller? And it's nothing but his music. So it's so perfect. But we all hit it off, and what is spectacular was, you know, the next day there was a rehearsal luncheon. and then a rehearsal, and then a welcome party. The next morning after that, very early call for official photos.
Right, call
and
for
then,
photos first.
And then the ceremony, which was a good call.
Yeah, photos first is a brilliant thing in a wedding. I'm now seeing the wisdom of that. So many weddings done after the thing, everybody looks so bedraggled in those things.
Yeah. You don't get to party afterwards. Like, right? You get to the reception so late.
Yes.
And then everybody's leaving and you don't get... And so then we also were able to do a receiving line at the reception.
Right.
So that at least once Lily and I got to talk to everybody.
Right, exactly.
And then don't have to feel the pressure to work the room and make the rounds.
Right.
So it really worked out well. But all those events, weaving through all those things, I've got to say what I was so struck by was how indelible an impact each of the 9 men that were there on Friday night made in terms of the wedding weekend.
That's still true.
The impact that they had on everybody.
Yeah.
You know, John Girodo gave a walking tour to a bunch of the guests
from
out of town.
Yeah.
But this is only maybe 15 people out of the 200-something that attended. But it was apparently this amazing tour. How amazing? So amazing that when they showed up at the wedding the next day, they had collected an honorarium, and John was serving as an usher, and they gave him this significant, generous thing for a free tour that he was doing
so
as an act of love for Lily.
Wow.
And but it's so cool because those people, they were raving about this tour. And so then everybody would listen to them. And these people, from the moment they had this tour, are having a great time. How much does that affect other people? The more people who are having fun, the earlier they're having fun, the more everyone's going to have fun. And I think that's one of the reasons the best wedding ever is that, you know, you try to dial it back and you try to start it earlier in smaller ways with smaller groups. And as those groups start to ripple outwards,
the fun ripples outwards.
And again, the 9 men were all such integral parts of it. Tucker.
Tucker's so great.
His reading.
So good.
How we've all heard St. Paul's letter to the Corinthians so many times. Never has there been a performance of it like this, ever.
It's true.
And if you are going to have someone read the Word of God, why not have an actor who's been hired to play God? That's not a bad thing. And he went rogue. He brought his own material to it at the beginning.
Which was lovely. Yes.
Our only concern was he was getting so emotional that he was getting towards the end of the stage and bumping into the microphone.
Well, yeah, these microphones really pick up. So,
It was at the edge of the stage, and so Lee pulled him back just a little bit, which was great. But everyone and the groomsmen, you were all such figures through this weekend. And what was so great about it also was that I felt celebrated, but I also felt like all of you served to really protect Lily's weekend, Lily's wedding.
Right.
Like, these men were these architectural pillars through the weekend, making sure that everything went right.
Well, that's
so that
exactly
nothing could harm her weekend,
right?
Her wedding.
And why would we want to harm it?
Exactly.
It's an honor to be a part of it. It was so much fun. It was unbelievably enjoyable, considering the number. How many weddings have I been the groomsman and a couple? It was like, some of them are quite the ordeal.
And it was just this perfect team, this elite team
together. The A-team.
I mean, we should really rent ourselves out as a...
as showing up at your party. Why not?
I mean, even before the rehearsal luncheon, John Lawler, our youngest member, 33, the age I was when I met him, and it was, you know, pointed out. Well, anyway, I shouldn't say that. But anyway, so John Lawler came with me to Friendship Auditorium to set up some more of the audio stuff for the reception. And one of the things that I needed help with was getting the piano into place under the light with the mics and testing it, because the musical director of the Breakfast Club, Don Snyder, was going to do a number at the reception
to get a standing
ovation. To set the levels and all of that, I needed somebody playing piano and singing.
Right.
So John came and did it, which was great. And we go, okay, we think this is good. But then that moment in the reception when Don sits down at the piano and sings, and John and I make eye contact from across the room, and it's like, oh my God, this sounds great.
Yeah, really.
We nailed it. He sounded, it was the best any performance there has ever sounded.
Right.
And then John finds out, and I had no way of knowing this, that the song we had asked Don to sing is John and his wife's favorite song. And so he's crying. Which is only fair because John in the reception started kind of everything. Once Lily was in place, unintroduced, he in silence walks up to the stage.
Not the reception, the wedding.
Oh, the wedding.
Yeah.
And does two verses of this prayer song. And, oh man. Not a dry eye in the house.
And then, but apparently he said he had a tuner, an app on his phone that he can, I never heard him listen to it. He just basically walked out and just started singing with no musical accompaniment.
No accompaniment, because Lily wanted it a cappella.
With, like, it just seemed like he just sort of wandered up and just started singing completely on key, in tune. It takes me four bars to even find what I'm singing right
now. No, and he's got to do it, hit it cold.
Yeah.
A cappella, nothing amazing. It was amazing.
Like shocking when I think about it.
And what I loved was, this is not the only round of applause that the wedding prompted, but he gets this wonderful round of applause when he's done. And I loved that because I've been to so many, hell, I've been to a lot of church services where, like, I want to applaud.
I know.
And nobody will applaud. It somehow is going to break the decorum. Like, if there's a great sermon, I would like to applaud.
I nearly got applause for a eulogy once, but that's how good that was.
But you didn't.
Because it's a funeral. It's, you should not be clapping.
But why can't we
clap at a funeral?
That's the one great thing about show business, and it's what everybody in every walk of life should experience. More people need to be applauded.
Right.
Literally applauded.
For a task well done.
Great memo.
Yeah.
Bob. That memo, 903, fantastic. Everybody, the memo Bob sent. Yay!
Written properly.
I mean, that's why I love when, you're on a plane and it lands and it's a really good landing on a heavy load and the crowd will erupt in applause.
Yeah, do they still do that?
I think so.
That was really big after 9/11, but I think it's dropped off.
I mean, if like, I don't know if they fly 747s anymore, but if you would do like a 747 flight across the ocean and the pilot nailed like a 3-point landing, you would always get applause.
Yeah,
going back even to the 70s.
Yeah.
So that was really cool that people applauded. The nicest, not nicest, everybody had so many nice things to say, but one of the things that really sort of blew Lily's mom away and was really music to my ears was the former priest who ran the parish at All Saints Beverly Hills, the Episcopal Church in Beverly Hills,
right,
and once served at the National Cathedral. He was in attendance at the wedding, and he told Betsy and then later came up and told us it was the most spiritual wedding he had ever been to.
And he's the head of the church of the thing.
In this secular space, church. But we didn't pick a secular space to deny the sacred, but rather to try to revivify it.
Revivify through storytelling and art.
Yeah. And we had our friend Pat McNeely, who I don't think you'd ever met.
No.
You may have been in Sci-Fests together.
Yes. Yeah.
But she came up to read the Corinthians' response
to
the letter to St. Paul.
Thank you for your letter from 55 AD.
Yeah, thank you for your letter dated 55 AD. It's a little touch and go because you don't want to be making fun of this, but there's some ways that it would be nice to really update this.
Yes.
Put this in a contemporary context.
Right, which he did.
And this priest said, Steve Huber, who does give brilliant sermons. I love his sermons, and I love them for this reason. But he said of her piece that it was 100% theologically sound.
Wow, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Hey.
Isn't that cool?
That's pretty cool.
So, it was big fun.
That was big fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. When did the wedding photos come out? I saw you post a couple things on Facebook.
I haven't posted anything. I made somebody's photo my cover photo. But, we had a strict no camera policy at the wedding.
Oh, Patty broke that then.
Well, I asked Lily. I wanted to see some things through her eyes. And yeah, I said, you know, when you came out from behind the curtain down that corridor in that the Egyptian temple-looking structure, when you emerged into it,
who did
you see first? What did you see first? What did you see? And she said, I saw nothing but people holding cameras up.
Well, where was this strict no photo?
When everybody entered, and it was in the programs.
Oh, that's right.
But the thing was, you know, like, it wasn't a no cell phone thing. It was literally no photography.
Right.
But not because of the idea that people would get photos and post them, but so much as, you know, Lil will go to concerts, and it will just drive her nuts that all you can see sometimes
is
in front of you the person holding their phone up because they're trying to film over the person in front of them, and now the people behind them can't see anything other than your screen.
And it's like you're mediating an experience. You're going to a concert specifically to have a live experience, and then you're filming the live experience, so you're already taking it one mediated level away. So why did you even bother to go to the concert? Why don't you just stay at home and watch it on TV?
Lily's cousin, Sarah Catherine, was at the Breakfast Club today with her husband, Eli, and it was great because they got into this little loving disagreement again about it, because he's saying, because she was one of the people who really posted a lot. And he said, yeah, you know, we're always getting into this conversation, which is she's taking photos everywhere. And when I ask her about it, she says, well, I want to remember the moment. And he says, but you're not living the moment. And
you'll never remember it.
And I came down right in the middle between them, always trying to bring people together. I said, no, I love that conversation where you get to go back and you get to go, oh, look. Remember this moment when I was taking a photo? And then there was the moment when I was taking this photo. And then there's the moment of me testing the camera.
Right. And I posted that one, too. Oh, hilarious.
So it was, was the one thing. But, it was cool. And we took the photos of the old vintage...
The train place that I'd never been before.
Travel Town.
That's so embarrassing.
Which they open up early for Lily Holloman.
That little train that went by, that was for her?
But the whole place was closed. Right. I mean, they opened it up just for her.
Oh.
It opened to the public at 10 a.m.
Oh,
we're there shortly after 8.
What kind of weight are you throwing around Travel Town?
You know, I mean, the entryway, the entry hall and the disabled bathroom, both of which have been closed at Friendship Auditorium for more than a year.
Yeah.
They get them done for Lily.
Oh.
She's somebody who has come here and she's let this city know why she's here. And, you know, John Girodo, who we talked about, I mean, he was feted at City Hall as an impact maker to watch for 2019.
Absolutely.
Well, so, I mean, it's, you know, it's on the recommendation of Lily Holland.
Is that right?
That City Hall gives this award.
I did not know that. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm going to step up my game now.
Yeah, I think when she thanked Travel Town at one point, I think it was then, thanking Travel Town for opening early, they said, well, you're a friend of the city.
Wow. Yeah. That's the kind of power you want to wield in Los Angeles.
And that makes me consort to friend of the city.
Consorting.
Arm candy to friend of the city. So, you know, Lily ends up taking my name.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's weird.
So,
Or is that weird? Is that not weird?
Well, yeah, because calling her Phil is so strange.
I know. Are you going to call her Phil Hollerman now? That's Philly?
Well, you're going to keep putting an R in Hollerman, apparently, which does not belong there.
I just slur my words.
That's all.
That's all.
My wolds.
My wolds. Wolvesman.
So yeah, so she's Lillian Sillers Larinus. She kept her middle name, which is a family name, and but she gets to keep Holloman as the actress. So I think that's the perfect thing.
Oh yeah, stage name.
We were talking about both taking Fuzz's name. That might have been good.
Aldrin.
Because remember when Fuzz was in the hospital, we would constantly be referred to as Mr. and Mrs. Aldrin. And I think that's because not many pets have their own last name.
Right.
But,
yeah, it has to be.
So do you want to talk about your big best man speech?
Do I want to talk about it?
Yeah.
I think we all heard it. You heard it. did you not? Or were you talking
Why? Do you think I'm going to play a clip of it at the beginning of the show?
No, I heard it was also re-recorded.
It is recorded. I'm going to do something at some point. I mean, we had a documentarian... you know, do some wedding video.
Right.
We didn't have a videographer. We didn't, you know, do the, you know, you're locking down and you're filming the thing, because my experience is nobody ever watches wedding videos, right?
No.
But a lot of different audio and some fly on the wall documentary stuff. And of course, at some point, as a gift to Lil, I'll put something together.
That's nice.
And what I love is we're already talking about, I don't know if it's in jest or not, but like a 1 year reunion with the guys, and maybe we will do the distillery
tour. I think that'd be great. It seems that we've been robbed, and yet we had such a great time together. Why not just come back a year
later? Why not? And it's a 3-day weekend.
3-day weekend. Why not?
We come back, and what if they're coming back with their significant others, you're coming back with Patty.
Yeah.
What if I got the Vista, like late one night?
We screen it and
I cut and I cut some video together from it we watch it.
If you find the time to do that, I'm not saying no to that idea.
And then it doesn't have to be the typical wedding video. It can be really funny stuff.
Yeah, right. The outtakes.
Wouldn't that be cool?
That would be really cool.
So maybe we'll do something. Reel. Maybe we'll do something. What would be a better way for Lily and I to get to celebrate our 1 year anniversary?
Than with the funnest bachelor party ever.
Tomorrow is our 1 year anniversary of getting engaged.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at that.
And I guess this is a good place to end it back in show business. But, you know, we got engaged at on stage at the theater where I saw Wings of Desire.
Right.
At the theater where I realized I wanted to become a filmmaker. And the morning we got married, the lead actor of Wings of Desire died.
Oh,
Bruno Ganz.
I did not realize that.
Who is probably most famous in this country as a social media meme, Hitler.
Yes.
As in, Hitler learns Michael Jackson has died.
Right.
Hitler learns. So if you've ever seen those videos, that's Bruno Ganz as Hitler from the movie Downfall.
Downfall, right. But you know him better from Wings of Desire.
All my angels look like Bruno Ganz and always will.
Always will.
Maybe before that, my angels looked like Harpo Marx. because the harp I always associated with angels.
Yeah.
And he was kind of this angelic figure.
And there's one sketch I think he is actually wearing wings.
But Bruno Ganz.
Bruno Ganz.
Was my angel. So that's just a little celebrity death we'll do. And we'll be back to do the post-mortem.
Post-mortem.
Maybe that was the word I was looking at. Autopsy was a little harsh. But we'll do the post-mortem on the Oscars next week.
Right.
And we'll have so many more show business topics to discuss.
Hooray! Till then, well, you know where to find us. You've emailed us before. You follow us on Twitter and Instagram, don't you? At Dean and Phil.
At Dean and Phil, yeah. That's great.
So we covered
it. Spell out the word and.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah.
And then we'll see you next week. I'm Dean Haglund.
I'm Phil Lernis. See you then. Belated spoiler alert.